Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
When we were talking to Keelan Gallagher earlier, I was asking her about that Tusla decision or exploration of hiring security guards. And we've had a statement from Tusla. They say, in circumstances of particularly difficult periods of violence and aggression towards Tusla staff or other young people, close protection personnel are engaged as an additional safety measure to protect social care staff and support them in the course of their work, where it's absolutely necessary in the case of a violent physical assault for any staff member to restrain a young person. It's done in line with specialised training. And you heard Keelan Gallagher, who is Special Rapporteur for Children, saying that she wanted to speak to Tusla about that decision. Now, on this day in 1949, 80,000 people gathered in Croke Park in Dublin to mark the Golden Jubilee of the Pioneer Total Abstinence Association, which was established in December 1898 by the Wexford priest Father James Cullen. Father Cullen devised the heroic offering through which people pledged to abstain from alcohol for life. And the Croke Park gathering was the biggest public celebration of Irish Catholic identity since the Eucharistic Congress in 1932. According to the media reports at the time, it was a powerful antidote to what the Irish press called the ugly title of the drunken Irish. So how significant was this occasion? What was the impact on the legacy of the pioneers? And does it all influence our current relationship with alcohol and sobriety? Well, I'm joined by Diarmaid Ferriter, Professor of Modern Irish History at UCD. Lovely to have you here.
Good morning.
Diarmaid, that was an important date in 1949. 80,000 people, let's imagine them for a moment, gathered in Croke Park, marking the Golden Jubilee of the pioneer movement.
There was a huge organisational endeavour behind it. The pioneers were very generous nearly 30 years ago in allowing access to their archives. They let me in and gave me unlimited access to their archive, and I was really struck by the extent of the organisational impulses. You mentioned James Cullen there, who was the founder of the Pioneers, who wanted to learn from the experiences of the Father Matthew Temperance Crusade in the 19th century, which a lot of people would be familiar with the name Father Matthew. It was quite loose. And what he wanted was something that was very structured, very well organised and very coherent. And that included mobilising people in a very disciplined and structured way. So what was seen in June 1949 on the hottest day of the summer was quite a spectacle. And Padraig O'Queeve, who was the General Secretary of the GAA, was also a committed pioneer. Mm-hmm. And you can see this kind of marrying of the Irish cultural nationalism with the Catholic piety, with the message about temperance.
An awful lot of people were pioneers. And an awful lot of people were very proud to wear the
James pin. Cullen died in late 1921. And at that stage, there were 280,000 pioneers. By the 1950s, there were an estimated 500,000 pioneers. That was an extraordinary figure in such a small, sparsely populated country. And of course, it was on the back of very considerable effort. And this was about banding people together in groups of 33 to represent the years of Christ's life. They had a spiritual director. They were answerable to a central council. Very structured. And of course, the pin. It's a very visible manifestation of your sacrifice. And it's the pin of the Sacred Heart. James Cullen was devoted to the Sacred Heart. A lot of people of a particular age will be familiar with the Irish Messenger of the Sacred Heart, which he established in the late 19th century. So it was all about the Sacred Heart. It's very visible. Now, there were, of course, always lachicos who claimed to be pioneers and would borrow perhaps a pioneer pin if they were going to a job interview or something like that. It was a way of appearing to be very upstanding. But it was also, for a lot of people, it should be acknowledged, a very undemonstrative personal sacrifice and piety. Mm-hmm. But the mobilisation in 1949 is an indication of how powerful the organisation had become. But it was never straightforward for those who were leading the pioneers when it came to getting influential backing. I found it very interesting that some of the Catholic bishops in Ireland in 1949 were lukewarm, if not indifferent.
They
weren't
pioneers.
Well, they weren't pioneers themselves, and they were perhaps sceptical about an organisation that had achieved such dominance.
That it might rival them.
Yeah, but there was always a concern about controlling Catholic lay movements. You know, now there were individual bishops who were very supportive of it, but I always remember Noel Brown. Do you remember Noel Brown as a politician in the late 1940s? When he came to write his memoir about his time as Minister for Health, he described calling to Michael Brown, who was the Bishop of Galway, and Michael Brown offered him champagne, and it was lunchtime.
Lovely.
And Michael Brown said, "I always like to drink champagne in the afternoon. You know, it is rich round voice."
Don't we all?
So I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, not all of those who were involved in the Catholic Church at senior levels were pioneers themselves, but you know, they took over the entire national transport system to get everybody to Dublin. And this provoked the ire...
For the Croke Park Jubilee.
For the Croke Park Jubilee. It provoked the ire of Flann O'Brien, Miles na gCapailín, who wrote a withering column the next day in the Irish Times, because people who wanted to get to the seaside on this hot June day, the whole transport system was paralysed for them. And he said the best that a working man can do, if he can do it at all, is to manage a pint of porter a day. He doesn't need to go to Croke Park to prove he's not a slave to whisky. And he said, in the interests of justice and fair play, the drinking men of Ireland should be able to take over Croke Park for the day on grounds of natural justice. And he said, let the people stay at home because the boozers are in town.
Yeah, but the boozers weren't as well organised as the pioneers.
They certainly weren't. And Flann O'Brien certainly didn't stick to his rule of one pint of porter per day for a working man. Yeah. But and again, it did provoke, I suppose, those responses. Yeah. And you are dealing with a culture where there's a very strong emphasis on abstention.
Well, tell me about that. Did we have a problem with the drink?
Of course we did. And I mean, this was one of the reasons why the pioneers emerged at the very end of the 19th century, was because of the damage that drink was inflicting, particularly on families. What I found most interesting was that it was established for women. Originally, the logic was that there would only be women members of the Pioneer Association because they were regarded as morally purer, and they were also seen as drink's most hapless victims. There were a lot of trade unionists too who spoke very strongly in favour of temperance because of wages of working men being squandered on drink and people being paid in pubs. So there was definitely a problem there, and the very fact that there was such a temperance crusade in the 19th century was indicative of a belief on the part not just of Catholics but Catholic nationalists that it was undermining Ireland's ability to govern its own affairs. You might be familiar with the slogan, "Ireland sober is Ireland free." Mm-hmm. You know, that was an important part of the 19th century crusade, and people like Daniel O'Connell would have aligned themselves, at least temporarily, until he broke his pledge for medicinal reasons. He would have aligned himself with the Father Matthew crusade. So, you know, linked into it is that idea of self-respect, of thrift, of cultural nationalism. But they are responding to what is believed to be a serious problem. And even in the early 20th century, and as Ireland moved towards independence, there was that belief that the Irish drink problem needed to be tackled. The writer George Russell, for example, in 1925, he wrote about a typical Irish town. He gave the example of Ballyhaunis, which had a population of 1,000. And he said there's a drinking shop for every 20 inhabitants of Ballyhaunis.
And every town was the same.
How many of these towns had a gymnasium, he asked, or a library? And the, you know, the lack of alternative when it came to social outlets, and there was a huge emphasis on licensing reform and so on.
Actually, but in some people were probably only having the one pint, though, as Flann O'Brien said.
You know, they were indeed, and I mean, this is the issue, I suppose, that we tend to think about drink and Ireland in extremes. So you have the total abstainers,
half,
and then you have the drunks.
People with a pin,
yeah,
and then everybody else is going wild.
Yeah, and of course the reality was very different. Ireland always had a high proportion of its population abstaining from drink. It still does. And international league tables of drinking are very complicated as a result of that. You know, we often talk about the per capita consumption of litres of pure alcohol, and where does Ireland fit in relation to that? You've got to factor in the cost of alcohol and the fact that you're doing a per capita computation, which doesn't factor in the fact that there are many who don't drink at all. So, you know, it's always been complicated like that. But what I found interesting about the pioneers is that they had a column in the Irish Catholic newspaper, which became one of the longest running columns in newspaper history. And the directors of the pioneers used that to highlight all of the social issues around alcohol, as well as obviously the religious aspect of the sacrifice and the heroic offering and the pioneer membership. they often engaged in debates about the social ills, and they were very concerned about the advent of the modern woman, for example, in the late 20s and the early 1930s. The way they were described, they were swallowing cocktails with the best of the simpering hobbledehoys. You know, this idea that
hobbledehoy.
Women, hobbledehoys, there's a word for you in our description. There's quite
like
a few
it.
Hobbledehoys around still today. But again, the idea that women would go into pubs. And they were also placing a particular premium on female membership because they were nurturing the next generation. And if they could instill those habits of sobriety. They looked to Matt Talbot as well, who people would be familiar with. You know, the working class Dubliner who turned his life around, a chronic alcoholic, and then became so self-sacrificing that he was regarded as an icon.
So tell me, when did the decline of the Pioneers begin then? When did they go from half a million to the descent? If you
the
like?
60s is a really challenging decade because of changing habits. People are drinking more, there's more social liberalisation, and it's becoming much more difficult to interest younger people in the idea of a lifelong pledge. And they had to recognise that, but they had to recast their strategy, perhaps. And they weren't impinging, I suppose, on the wider issue of drink culture in the way that they might have wished. So that certainly becomes an issue for them. There's much more of a secular focus on the drink problem. There's a National Council on Alcoholism, for example, that's formed in 1965. Even before that, the first European branch of Alcoholics Anonymous was opened in Dublin in 1946. And they're not necessarily treating it as an issue that can be dealt with through heroic sacrifice and prayer. So there's much more of a secular focus, and then a debate about whether or not alcoholism is a disease, and where do the Pioneers fit into all of that. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a challenge for them in the 1960s and the 1970s.
Then moderation rather than abstinence becomes the thing, doesn't it? And certainly nowadays.
And they weren't anti-drink. And I published a book on the Pioneers, and I remember we were discussing what we would do for the launch. Would there be drink at the launch? Of course, it's all Irish people wanted to know about. There was loads of drink at the launch, because the late Micheál McGrail.
The usual warm wine. Did you have the usual?
Micheál McGrail, who, you know, was the one of the senior Jesuits involved in the Pioneers, he was thunderous in his insistence. We are not anti-drink. And they weren't anti-drink.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they were promoting a particular ideal for those who wanted to engage in that sacrifice. But that was the message, that we're not anti-drink. But, it became very difficult to make that message clear. Particularly in later decades.
Listen, you better go and have your afternoon champagne now, because our time is up.